jump, 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 jump. I said a hip hop, the hip it, the hip it, the hip hip hop, you don't stop. Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the time of the week when we have a couple of friends here in studio with me. Brave souls, even though I'm sneezing and coughing a little bit right now. They came in anyway. I don't think I told one of them that. So, you know, tough luck. Here he is. Jeremy Evans, who's a good friend and a former official in the Republican Party of Florida, Escambia County, other titles involved in that. Jeremy, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. And then David Baer, who is, I don't know, he doesn't do anything, really. I mean, he's like the CEO of the Lewis Baer Company, and he's like the chairman of Florida West and Triumph and the TDC. Did I get it all? That's it, though, right?
Florida Beer Wholesaler Association, a chair also.
Stop it.
Gentleman and a scholar.
Yeah, the thing I've noticed is like the Triumph meetings, they run great, but the guy who's running the TDC meetings is not, shouldn't even have the job, obviously.
I totally agree.
Gentlemen, welcome.
Your boss should have that job.
No, she should. She'd be great at it.
She
loves nothing more than to be in the limelight.
Right.
That's her favorite thing in the whole wide world. So since you're on that board, I was going to ask you, the flag controversy in Santa Rosa County, one of the key questions around that has been whether it's eligible for tourism money, right? And, of course, we've had a lot of conversation about that regarding the Chappie James Monument, yep, plane and flag. The flag's not as big. But, you know, Don Spencer, the clerk of the court comptroller, said, can't fund it with tourism money because it's not a tourism draw. It's going to be at the county municipal complex, which is not a tourist destination. I can't see it. Maybe a different location, maybe in connection with some other kind of surrounding elements. Maybe it would start to become a TDC eligible or TDT eligible expense. But you're the expert on this. What do you think?
Well, I'm not necessarily an expert, but
you're the chairman of the council. So, what's your opinion?
So the expenditure of tourist development tax has to be for the primary purpose for tourism development. And so is the flagpole going to drive tourism? Is that the primary purpose for the flagpole?
Okay, so primary is a key word in that.
That is in the statute.
Okay.
That is what it says.
So it can't be also useful as tourism. It needs to be designed for tourism.
That's the statute.
So, I mean, is a giant flag primarily for tourism, or is it primarily a campaign expense? I don't know which.
I don't know. That would be up to the county commission. They'd have to designate that.
Okay.
They have to make what's called a legislative determination that,
okay,
the primary purpose of that flagpole is for tourism development.
Okay. All right. The primary purpose. That's an interesting one.
So placemaking.
Yeah.
Is the primary purpose of placemaking can be for tourism development.
And sure, and the more it starts to become an attraction, the more it starts to become primarily tourism.
Right.
The more it's just a flag, so to speak, the less it's tourism.
Correct.
In my opinion, sounds correct. Like, okay. Jeremy, your thoughts either about that slice of the question or just, you know, generally about the never-ending conversation we have about this giant flag in Santa Rosa County?
I mean, I think that the two can not necessarily be exclusive of each other. It can be a tourist draw, and I think for the people who politically would support the idea of having a giant flag, you would maybe draw some of those people from at least this area of the country. Like, those people can tell you where the current largest flag in the state is.
Right.
So there is some information and some knowledge about what this largest flagpole is. And so I think there can be an argument that, you know, you put it on the Blackwater River, you maybe not put it in the county courthouse, that maybe there is some
Navarre Beach.
Yeah. That there is some place that you could make the argument for it. And it is, does not mean that it is not a political statement at the same time.
You know, it's interesting I don't know how much in this conversation, when you look at what a law means at Tallahassee passes, you look at the language of the statute itself, but you also go back and look at what did they say in the committee meetings? What did they say in the debate? What were the amendments allowed and disallowed, right? So you look at context. In this context, there are very few people from the public who talked about why they wanted this because it's a great tourism thing. They wanted it for their own expression of the patriotism of Santa Rosa County, which is a fine enough value, but is not a primarily tourist-oriented value, right?
Unless there's a bunch of, you know, I don't know. Unless there's a bunch of people who are driven to come to that type of a community, right?
Like, so like the patriotic caucus or the reenactors or something like that.
The folks who spoke at the county commission meeting in favor of that decision, those people exist in all of Florida's 67 counties.
Right.
And throughout the larger part of the South.
Yeah.
And so to say that it would not draw people in to look at it and see it, I think that if you want to take the argument that absolutely nobody would come to see this thing, I think you're dead wrong. Now, does it have a tourist? At what point does it?
Primarily.
Does it tip over to the primary? Whole other thing.
No, that's
but those
point.
People that spoke about the patriotic values, they exist in all of the counties, and would some of them would come to see this flagpole.
Okay, so even though they're not saying tourism, they're representing what would be the foundation of flag tourism.
Right, right. And there's what is eligible for the use of tourist development tax, and then what is the highest and best use of tourist development tax. So it may draw people. How much money do they need? Of tourist development tax are they going to spend on this project? And what is the return on that investment?
So right.
How many heads and beds are they going to create? How much more economic impact will those tourists make as a result of this project? And if we're talking about like 50 more people a year might come visit for $1 million of tourist development tax, I would say it's diminishing return.
Right. Okay. And also, you know, do keep in mind that it might not be 100% funded by TDT money, right? They might do a private-public partnership, and you know they raise funds elsewhere, whether it's from other government sources or from private sources or whatever. And I assume that the you know it wouldn't change the primary purpose, but it would make it easier to say yes if it's being funded from a variety of sources, so the cost is lower. Generally speaking, we're talking to David Baer, Jeremy Evans here in studio. It's The Wrap. Let's get a quick traffic on the fives from Jake.
All right. This traffic report is brought to you by Allstate. Not seeing any major slowdowns on our roadways. Highway 98 is looking great through Gulf Breeze and Navarre. Highway 90 coming out of Milton through Pace is good. Highway 29 south through Cantonment and Inslee is accident free. If you see anything out there on the roadways, let us know. Call or text our traffic tip line 437-1620. Some people just know that the best rate for you is a rate based on you with Allstate, not one based on anyone else. Visit Allstate.com or call for a free quote today. I am Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. Back to David Baer, Jeremy Evans here in studio for The Wrap. David, as a business owner, you deal with a lot of employees. You know, you may not directly hire off a lot of people, but you certainly know what's going on in that realm of your business. Very interesting comments a couple weeks ago at the Chamber of Commerce. I haven't actually had a chance to play them on the air. I will at some point. They keep getting pushed back. They're never quite urgent enough to do today. But Carolyn Fries from the Haas Center, Career Source Ascarosa in connection with the Haas Center, she was making the case that it's hard to find employees at any level of qualification. And even when you do find employees at any level of qualification, they seem generally far less eager to go above and beyond. People don't want to work. If you can convince them to work, they still don't want to work. And, I mean, we have great people that we find here, and I know that there are the exceptional person, but it seems like there's been a massive shift, either psychologically, generationally, something. What's your sense of that situation?
Well, I think that shift has been happening for quite some time now.
Agreed.
I mean, you know, I'm a Generation X, and the baby boomers and, you know, whatever the generation was before that, my parents.
They thought we were worthless and weak.
They did. And those folks were loyal to their companies. They got a job, and they kept that job for their entire career.
Right.
Right? So then and then all of a sudden, they started cutting those jobs, and those folks were having at, 55, 60 years old have to go find new employment.
Right.
They weren't loyal to them because they were all doing these, right-sizing their organizations. And so folks in my generation, our generation, turned around and looked and said, well, these companies aren't loyal. I'm not going to be loyal. I'm going to look for what's best for me. And so if I'm working at a company and I'm working hard and I'm doing a great job, but the threat of a right size or downsize, however you want to call it, could possibly change my lifestyle, my employment status, I'm going to look for what's best for me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to keep doing this job, but if there's any sense that there might be a cutback, I'm going to find another job, and I'm just going to jump especially if I can find a job that pays me more with better benefits and easier work or whatever it may be. And so I think that just continues to, like, iteration after iteration of employees looking at companies and saying, you're just looking out for your bottom line. You're not looking out for the employees who are actually doing this work for you.
Yeah.
There's also the other side of that. There's a lot of employees, a lot of people who really don't want to work that hard.
Right.
I mean, they're seeing these. I mean, not everybody is going to be a social media influencer and make $10 million a year with TikTok videos or whatever, YouTube videos. But everybody sees there's like this easy paycheck, and I don't want to go do this. I don't want to go to college. And not everybody has to go to college, but if I don't go to college, where am I going to make this kind of money? Oh, I could do it as an influencer, but they're not doing it. And so they have to get, you know, maybe a blue collar job, and that's really hard work. You know, they have to be there early in the morning. They have to work till late in the afternoon and heavy lifting and, you know, lots of stuff. And so it's just a turnstile in certain positions. And so I think it's incumbent on the company itself to look at the employee and what can we do for them, because mm-hmm. they are the ones getting the work done every single day. You know, I mean, I'm sure they think I sit in my, you know, my golden palace at behind my desk.
Well, I heard it's Onyx actually, but yeah,
know,
right.
Onyx, it's Onyx. You know, you know, I'm looking at strategy and tactics and where we can move this company and try to diversify and do all that stuff. But they're where the rubber hits the road. And that's one of the reasons when you come to the Lewis Bear Company, the first thing you see when you pull up is a statue of one of our drivers that we commissioned an artist to make with a stack of beer next to him, because that's, we recognize our success was built on their backs and the hard work they do. So we have to look out for them. We have great benefits for them. We've done a lot of things from changing from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week.
Oh, so you've already Bernie Sanders internally.
Yeah, well, we still deliver five days a week.
Maybe he's not the icon you want to acknowledge.
No, but, I mean, I don't want to legislate that.
Right, I got
we
you.
Just want to implement it by free choice. Yeah. You know, and that's one of the things that we've done and changed some of the benefits. And because you have to recognize what's important, and what's important are the people. And that's how you get the work done. And so they only do a good job if they feel supported. If they, you know, and they're still going to turn over because they're everybody.
See, I don't, maybe that's more of a new thing. I don't know. I kill myself for my job, every job I've ever had. And I don't think I'm all that weird for our age group. I think that there's a lot of people like us who even we might grumble about it, but we still were like, we've internalized that work ethic. And not everybody. Okay. But my perception is that there's the generation now seems to be, and again, we have been tremendously lucky here at News Radio, but I have seen it elsewhere that people are like booking appointments for jobs and then don't show up for the appointment, or they sign a contract and they don't show up for their first day of work. I mean, that kind of thing is just weird to me.
And I can tell you that in my business of retail healthcare, whether it is doctor, pharmacist, nurse practitioner, mm-hmm. top of the food chain, making multiples of 6 figures a year, to the person who's in high school that's the first job, it is harder today than it is to find people to hire than it was 5-10 years ago. And I think that you have this one giant chasm that was COVID that changed the entire work dynamics that's happened in this process, where people were able to work from home. Well, when you're working from home, that's great for you. It's hard to build employee engagement in your right. company. I think here in Escambia County in Pensacola, we're quite fortunate. We have the Lewis Bear Company. We have Navy Federal Credit Union. We have, you know, Studer and his organization that are built around how do we invest in our employees? How do we drive that engagement of our employees? Because as a business, you can't afford to say they're just lazy. Like, as at the end of the day, beer still has to get delivered. You still have to find a way to engage those to engage those folks to drive it. And it's going to be, like you said, the onus is going to be on the business. Individuals aren't going to change. You have to be the catalyst for change, or nothing's going to happen. I do think there has been a change, but, you know, it's also, you know, you hear the gold, what the jokes about, you know, there used to be the gold watches when you retired.
Right.
And that stuff cut back, and businesses weren't invested in employees anymore, so employees stopped investing in businesses.
Before they stopped downsizing, they started getting rid of pensions and benefits, and, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
and I think we're coming full circle around that now, and then you're going to see the re-engagement and the redrive and those kind of things.
What I can't figure out, and this is, you know, I'm not necessarily in a position where I can sort of get enough personal raw data on this. That's why I kind of wanted to ask you, David and Jeremy, is it more generational or is it COVID? I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of things in society that everybody does because they don't think it can be any other way. And so we just kind of keep doing a thing, good or bad. Okay, sometimes good. I mean, showing up for work and thinking that, you know, you need to have a job. I mean, those are kind of good things. But all of a sudden, COVID seemed to show people you can just not work. You can just stay at home, or you can, you know, negotiate for a job that gives you what you want and do the minimum. I mean, it doesn't seem quite fair to blame it all on some generational failure. But it doesn't seem quite fair to say that it was entirely COVID either. It seems like a collage of causes.
There's a lot of variables. I mean, just an unlimited number of variables that are affect what goes on in the workplace by individual person, mm-hmm. the individual company that's going on, the community. Obviously, a pandemic, you know, is a whole nother issue. You know, it's just, and generational people are different. I mean, we're definitely different than the generation before us. I mean, psychologically, everything. Physically, we're living longer, and so we're looking at...
We look better.
We look better.
Some of us.
What I was thinking is, and I've had this experience more during COVID, but somewhat recent. And, of course, Florida had the lighter version of this because we didn't really lock down. I mean, we locked down temporarily, but we didn't really stay that way.
We never had COVID in Florida.
Yeah, right. No, that's right. Not really. Not anyway. but the idea that the things you take for granted will be there, you know, weren't. And I think, well, there will be employees. You can always find employees. You can't just always find employees anymore. Like, that's just, it's not always a scarce resource, but it's certainly not the take for granted, well, we're going to open a restaurant and certainly we'll be able to staff it. You can open a restaurant and hope you can staff it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, one of the big issues with finding qualified or quality employees is having a developed workforce. That's one of the things, that, at least from Triumph's perspective, that we're very active in doing is working with educational institutions to provide workforce development, starting in with the public school systems in third grade, the state colleges, the universities. I mean, the state, Pensacola State College just got a grant from the, you know, an appropriation, or hopefully knock on wood, if the governor doesn't veto it.
We don't talk about these things until the black pen has passed.
Sorry. you know, for some workforce development for ST. I mean, you know, it's A&P training for these maintenance, repair, and overhaul systems. It's Leonardo Helicopters needs them. ST Aerospace needs those. They're the same training, right? But they're tasked with, you know, hiring all these people to come do this work. And we don't have people that are ready. We have some because former military and all that other. But they need a whole lot more people. And so we're putting these programs in place to be able to do that. Once people are trained and go to work and know what they're supposed to be doing, they'll stay there. Mm-hmm. When you just throw somebody into the workplace, you know.
Or just assume that somebody in the community that would take that job even knows the training is available and the job exists. We're talking to David Baer, Jeremy Evans here in studio for The Wrap. Jake's got traffic on the fives.
This traffic report is brought to you by Knox Pest Control. I'm still not seeing anything out on our roadways. It's been really quiet this morning. Looks like the fog has lifted and not seeing any accidents reported by FHP. If you see anything out there, you can always call or text our traffic tip line, 437-1620. Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Jake. So we'll end on a fun note, maybe. It's a bit of a heavy note, but it's kind of an interesting one. They raised the age, well, if the governor signs it, raised the age to be a stripper to 21 from 18. And, of course, I'm not a fan of strip clubs. I wish the world would be better if we didn't have pornography and all this stuff. But I kind of said, look, they're 18, 19, 20-year-olds earning a living this way right now. And, yes, connections with sex trafficking. Yes, connections with force, underage. It's all these issues, right? But you can't just throw a deadline down and throw somebody out of a job, because where are they going to go? The likely best alternative for these women is going to be something much worse. So delay the implementation or create a pathway or job training or something like that. But I don't know. It's hard to argue against, man, it's better if our daughters aren't stripping at 18. I don't, you know, it's hard to argue against that.
I pretty much 100% where you are on it. As a general rule, we have this weird idea of adulthood either begins at 18 or begins at 21.
Right.
And I think we should come to a definitive answer as a society that we accept that at 21, you can be in the military, you can vote, you can drink, you can strip, you can do all those things. Or at 18, you're an adult, you can do all of those things.
Buy a gun.
I'm 100% on the aspect of it just any part of me that might possibly defend the decision to keep at 18 makes me feel gross and
right,
icky.
Yes, exactly.
But I do think in general, and I don't know what the right answer is, 18 or 21 should be a hard answer on either side of it.
We should pick an age. David, you got 10 seconds.
Strip clubs are my customers. They sell beer. I have a 17-year-old daughter. She turns 18 this summer. I think, and I am fully in support of giving people the opportunity to choose for themselves.
Very good. Gentlemen, thank you so much for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.